So, we've seen from before Yantif that we have a notion of liability for Nezikin, and we talked a little bit about what creates that liability. We talked about whether there is an actual Torah prohibition involved in damaging someone's property, and together with the whole notion of Avos Nezikin, of there being various ways in which my stuff can hurt your stuff, so what exactly is the cause for liability once that happens? And we talked about whether that's because of some transgression, because of some Avera, is it a simple responsibility that once you have damaging stuff that's yours, the Torah imposes a responsibility on you to watch it, and if you don't, boom, it's your problem? Or is it somehow that this is associated with your action? It's like your activity. It's a little bit of both. So we'll see how that plays a role in understanding a little bit about what's going to go on here. So the Gemara and Avez and the Bez, which you got to see, talks in a little bit more detail about animals, about shor. And what we want to do now is to try to lay down some of the yesodos of what exactly is included in a shor. And the Gemara uses as an example, really, for a broader question. Right? What's the broader question? Now, we know that we have avos. If we have avos, it means we also have toldos. We have next-level concepts. And the Gemara wants to know, well, we find that language in other areas too. We find that language in Hilchos Shabbos, and we find that language in Hilchos Tumah V'Tara. So sometimes it's just a way of saying it's derived differently, but it's essentially the same thing. Like in Hilchos Shabbos, where pretty much there's very little practical difference between an Av and a Tolda. Or sometimes it means something more significant, like in the context of Tumah V'Tara, where it means every next generation has a little bit less damaging power to it. So the Gemara wants to know, what's going on in Bava Kamma? What's going on in Nezikin? So the concept of an Av and a Tolda, are they the same? Are they different? Are they just terms for derivation? So in that context, we get into the question of looking at shor. So when an animal damages, we find on this daf at least, that really, there's a lot more than three, but we start off with three categories that we can subdivide it in. And so what are the three categories? What are the three different ways an animal can harm? How can an animal be harmful according to our Gemara? Sorry? Shein v'regel v'keren. Okay, so what's going to emerge is that these three are significant because it makes a difference. Right, so we're going to have to figure out what is what, practically speaking, and we'll see a little bit, that it's going to affect halachic issues. It's going to affect a lot of questions that come up in real life because there is a difference between the categories. Now, two of these categories are much more similar to each other, and one is much more different than the other two. How does it break down that way? Keren, right? Keren is much more different. So it's not as important to differentiate between a Shein and Regel. We find them grouped together a lot. So we don't always care so much whether something is Shein or Regel. But whether it's Keren or not makes a difference. Right? So we'll get into the details of these differences. But just off the bat, what are the halachic differences if something is going to be keren as opposed to shein or regel? Chatzi nezek. So one of them is a concept of chatzi nezek existing, right, that the other ones don't really have. It seems, although we'll see this might be a little bit of a dispute, it seems like the whole notion of there being a partial liability, chatzi nezek, it seems like that's a keren thing, as opposed to a Shein V'Regel thing. Maybe. We'll see. There could be some dispute about that. Unless, when is it not Chatzin Nezek and Karen? When it's Smuad. Right? So once we determine that it is a repeat offender, so then it flips into it flips into full nezek. Now, it's also important to point out, just as a matter of practicalities, in case this comes up, and again, these are things which are discussed in real life. So, the difference between chatzi nezek and nezek actually is much more than the amount. It's not just how big is the bill going to be. There's another very important practical difference between the two. Because if we assume that chatzi nezek is a knas, that's a discussion in the Gemara, so then it affects more than just the final number. Why? This is not something you're going to see explicitly in the Gemara here, but it's something that's very important in practicalities. That nowadays, just a little background, if any of you were around in Yeshiva long enough to have learned, anybody was around in the Sanhedrin times? How many times was the Sanhedrin? How many times when the Yeshiva learned Sanhedrin? Anybody around long enough for that? Right, so if you recall in Sanhedrin, so we discussed this a lot, that it's a big question how we function as a Beis Din nowadays. We don't have smuchin nowadays. Even then-a-days, they only had smuchin in Eretz Yisrael. They only gave smuchin in Eretz Yisrael. So practically speaking, they only had smuchin in Eretz Yisrael. Nowadays, we don't have that either, so we don't have smuchin anywhere. And even when they had smuchin, it was an issue in Bavel. They didn't have smuchin in that location. So that's a problem because theoretically, to be a dayan, you need to be a samuch. You need to be ordained, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. So if you don't have a beis din smuchin, so how do we operate in any judicial context nowadays? So the Gemara says, well, we can't allow it just to be hefkervelt for a lot of reasons. We can't allow people can just do whatever they want and there's no accountability because you don't have any dayanim, you don't have any smuchim. So we have a way of functioning even without smuchim. There's a lot of lumdas to how that works. Not so much our issue, so we won't spend time on it now. The Gemara calls it shlichusayhu, which sounds, in terms of the word, it sounds like it's a principle of shlichus, that the batei din and chutz laretz and bizman hazeh are somehow working as agents of the dayanim smuchim. But there's a whole question if that's really what it means from a lumdership perspective, but whatever it is, that's what the Gemara calls it. There's some mechanism that allows for functional batei din despite the lack of smuchim. However, the batei din that we have in chutz laretz and without nowadays everywhere, so we are limited. And we can't take on everything. In order for it to be under the jurisdiction of a contemporary Beis Din, a Shlichusayu Beis Din, so it has to be something that is common enough, and that's a whole discussion what's called common and what isn't common. But what's most important for us today is that it also has to be mamon as opposed to knas, meaning that it has to be a direct monetary liability. So if somebody stole from you, if somebody damaged your property under those circumstances, if somebody borrowed money from you they didn't repay, so that's a monetary debt. But something that's punitive, what we call a knas, so that we don't deal with knasos nowadays. So that becomes very significant, that if something is under the heading of a knas, so Beis Din's not going to deal with it in our practical context. So that's important because, again, a lot of this is about issues that come up. Yes, sir?
So for chatzi nezek, we're calling that a knas?
Well, it's a machlokas in the Gemara. Let's work off that assumption right now that it's a knas. So that concept of a knas is going to have practical implications. So that gives us really one difference that turns into two. So the difference between Karen and the other is because it has chatzi nezek, so it's a difference in the amount, but it's more than that because it could mean the whole issue can't really be dealt with in our contemporary bat didit. And then what would be a third difference, also very significant, one of the defining differences here also?
Between Karen and the other?
Yeah. Oh, well, that's a difference in terms of figuring out what goes into what. that, but the question is in terms of what are the practical implications of once we've labeled something, what are the practical implications of the label? So the other one is going to be a major issue here is Shane and Regel have an exemption if it is Risha Ceramic. Something that happens in public, Shane and Regel are Pater. So when are they Chayiv? Right, they're Chayiv Birshas HaNizak. So if your animal jumps onto someone's property, goes into someone's backyard, and does damage that is classified as Shane or Regel, then you will be Chayiv. But if he does the same thing in Rishos HaRabim, you won't be. And Karen is going to be Chayiv in Rishos HaRabim also. So again, loads of practical implications. So we have to figure out what's going to be called Karen. And Shane and Regel, we don't know how important yet that is to distinguish between them, but certainly Karen on the one hand and the other two, that makes a difference. Okay, so now to go back to what you were saying. So we were first asking for practical differences, but so now we have to classify what's what. So what makes something Karen? So Dan, you said a second ago, so what makes something a Karen? So it sounds like from our Gemara on that base that the issue is Kavanos Olahazik. Because the other two, we'll define them momentarily, but they're not malicious. They're not evil animals that are coming to cause you problems for the sake of problems. They have other reasons that motivate them that lead to their impact. But Karen has this aspect to it that it's Kavanos Olahazik. Now, is that the only defining attribute? So we'll see. That's an issue because there's another aspect to Karen. What's the other aspect to Karen? So you may not have seen this yet. It goes... Sorry? So that seems to be true about everything. Right? That's what the Gemara says on the base, that on the base Manalev, that's the Tzad HaShava for everything. But there's an additional component which might come to define Karen also. So I asked you to look at the Mishnah on Tezvav and Beis if you got to that. But
isn't Bali Chaim?
Sorry?
Isn't Bali
Chaim? Well, these all seem to apply to the Bali Chaim.
Oh, we're not talking about Bor at all?
Right now we're focusing on these three, on Karen and Shane and Regel.
So if it's domesticated based off of that Mishnah?
It's related to the domesticated issue. But there's a passage which you may not have seen because it's actually before the Mishnah, but the Mishnah is important too. If you look up on the Gemara and Tezvav and Beis. So a couple of lines above, about 7-8 lines above the Mishnah. So it starts with a line that starts with Nizke, but then two words in. Right, Hai Kalva, let's say you have a dog. I may have a personal canine phobic tendency. So if it seems like I have a little bit too much appreciation over the next few days of Gemaras and Poskim that deal with the risks of dogs, whatever, you'll forgive me. But give it a little bit of space because the line right before the Mishnah talks about the exhortation not to have dangerous dogs. We won't read that far. We'll give the dogs a little bit of space. But before you see that, so the Gemara says, Hai Kalba da Achal Imri. Let's say you have a dog that eats little lambs. Or you have a Shunra, equal opportunity offender. It could be a dog, it could be a cat. So all the dog people and the cat people should all be on notice. So you have a dog that eats little lambs, or you have a cat that eats chickens. What is that? Mishunahu. That's considered to be different. That's unusual. Below Magvinim Bavavel. Right, so that's the difference we were just talking about, that in Bavel, when you don't have smuchim, so you can't deal with this. As Rashi fills in, De'ein donin dinei knasos ela b'smuchim, u'b'bavel ein smicha. So since in Bavel we don't have smuchim, so we can't deal with knasos, so this situation, you don't deal with it. And then Gemara clarifies, v'hani mili b'rav rivi, That's assuming we're talking about these big animals. But if they were smaller, so then that would be normal, and that would not apply. Okay, and the Gemara brings in a few other things which we don't have to focus on right now. Okay, so what does it sound like we're talking about here? Which category is this? This is actually, if we're talking about not taking it in Bavel, we're talking about the knas. Which one has knas possibility?
It's
the carrot. Right? And if you look at Tosus down over there, Tosus Vahashta, which says, assuming that's what we're talking about, that we're following the opinion here of Palga Nizka Knasahu, Chatzi Nezik is a knas. So what are we talking about? See the last two lines of this Tosus. Have we told that the Karen de Travaihu Mishunim Hain? Afalgav the Karen Kavanosa Lahazik. Right, so Karen is Kavanosa Lahazik, but also one of its definitions seems to be that it is Mishuna. That it is something unusual. Now, of course, this kind of goes in two directions because ultimately it can become usual for this animal, and that's where it's called Muad.
But it's still Karen.
Right. So Karen, they starts off as an action that is unusual, but can be determined to be regular for this particular animal. But still the nature of the Hezek is unusual for this animal overall, and therefore it's in the category of Karen. Who's up first? Good. Sammy? Yeah?
Are we only willing to say that though for this specific animal?
Like, well, the Mishnah's going
to
say
that
Karen
to happen to, the shore of some
So, sir, this particular species or this particular actual animal?
Yeah, species or this one animal.
What makes a difference? Because we'll see that the Mishnah is going to say that certain animals have tendencies that are going to define what's not Mishnah, what is. But then also, clearly, an animal, by becoming a Muad, is going to identify itself as a Yotzim and a Klal. So, could be both. Maury?
Why would we not want our working assumption of Karen to be something that can be unusual and then be more. It could still be Karen.
It could be, but it's interesting. Right. It's just an unusual thing that it flips from both. Its unusuality becomes
right.
usual.
But yeah. Well, by definition, it had to have been at one point unusual.
Correct. Right. So the question is that the definition? Because we now see here two classifications for Karen, or two aspects, two qualities of Karen. Either that it is Kavanos Lahazik, while the others are less so malicious in nature, or that it's Mishunah, at least it starts off Mishunah. Debedai?
So it's not Shane, even though it was done for Hannah?
So what's done for Hannah? Oh, so here the fact... That's what it might be. So the question is, the question you're bringing up here, it's going to be a very important issue, when you have something that mixes together various elements, what's the key element? Right? Once we have the possibility of more than one attribute being relevant, so then you're opening up the possibility of having conflicting attributes. And then, what do you do with that? So we're going to see that's going to become an important question. Okay, so it seems like what we have here is two possible definitions for Karen, which is going to impact a lot of details of what happens practically. So we'll have to figure out which definition is going to dominate. If there's going to possibly be a stira, so where can you find the key definition? Mori.
Kavana equals maliciousness?
So that's also going to be a little bit unclear. And there's some interesting stuff to try to figure out about how we define exactly kavana. And I think we're going to see some indications that it's a little arguable. Because where do you draw the line between maliciousness and willful indifference, or malicious indifference, all the different categories that you find applied to people? We're going to have to figure that out. And there's going to be some interesting parallels we can draw. And this could actually bring us back to our Mechila by Nezikin issue we'll see in a few minutes. Hi.
What do you mean that when there's a stira, which one's going to be the key defining?
Well, because if we see that something, we can mix and match attributes, that one particular action could have an element of this and an element of that. So which one is the most important? Which one that says what is it that makes it Karen? Is it Mishunah that makes it Karen, or is it Kavanah Selahazik that makes it Karen? Because if it's just Kavanah Selahazik, it sounds like Kavanah Selahazik and the Hana are mutually exclusive. Because it sounds like they are defining the same point. It's one or the other. Right. Which goes a little bit to your question.
The Hana of the damage goes hand in hand with Kavanah?
No, it seems like the definition of the term Kavanah Selahazik and Hana Behezego are essentially mutually exclusive, that they occupy each other's space. Because we talk about shame, we talk about eating something, and we call that Hana. So the point is, he's motivated to eat, he's not motivated just to be destructive. As opposed to Karen, we say he's motivated just to be destructive. So it's one or one or the other, they're mutually exclusive terms. If he has another motive, so then it's already not that. So then fine, if that's our definition, then we're not going to be confused. But if we define it as Mishunah, then it could be both. That goes to your question. It could be Mishunah, or it could be ambiguous, rather. It could be, maybe it's Shane, maybe it's Karen. We don't know.
That makes it seem like it is maliciousness, because the second that I'm going to try to, that I want to be productive and actually do something beneficial, even if it's to myself, I'm going to be gaining from it. The goal is not to destroy.
Well, it's going to depend on that, if that's the definition. Right. So that goes to the question, is the most important part that it's Mishunah, or is the most important part that Kavanah Selahazik? All right, so let's look for a second now about the other two categories here. So, Shane and Ragel are pretty similar to each other. They seem to be distinguished more in their attributes rather than in their halachic details so far. So, Shane is defined in the Gemara as, well, like we just said, Hana Behezeko, right, that you benefit from what you're doing. And what is Regel? Hezeko Matsui. Right? This is what happens. He walks and he walks on things. You know, this is essentially the derech of life. So in these two cases, there is a very significant exemption. The exemption of Rishus HaRabim. So why is that true? Why is a Shane exempt in Rishus HaRabim? It's going to have a lot of implications. So why is that true? So on the surface, the answer is actually it's a pasuk. That the pasuk, which the Gemara quotes parts of in different places, but if you want to look it up, it's in Shmos and Perek Chav Beis. Parshas Mishpatim, where the Torah describes, the Gemara has been quoting this pasuk intermittently, the source for Shane, Chav Beis Dalet, Ki aver ish sadeh o cherem, v'shilach es b'ira, uvier b'stei acher. Let's say somebody causes somebody else's field to be consumed. He allowed or he sent his animal in there, his consumer in there, his consuming beast, to eat something up. And where did it do this damage? So this is the crucial phrase here. Ubier viste acher. He went onto someone else's property, and that's where he did the damage. So you could say, okay, that's the answer. It's Xeris HaKasav. It's simply a pasuk that the liability for Shane is in the pasuk as somebody else's property as opposed to public property, or as even more opposed to the mazik's property. Right? If some animal comes onto my property and gets eaten by my animal, so that would be a different story. But there's a svara to it, presumably, also. And here's something you can look at tomorrow. The Rush, right over here in the beginning of Bava Kamma, the Rush quotes the Rif, and they explain what they think the Svara is. Now, you haven't seen this yet, but you could try to guess. What do you think the Svara is? presumably explain the pasuk's limitation. Why should it be? Yeah? Sorry?
It's like,
right, so that's if you see it from the pasuk. And it's using the pasuk, but why does the pasuk make such a distinction? Is there a svara we can relate to? Shed?
Everyone has the right to be there, and the Nizak should be more careful.
Ah, okay. So that seems to be the key element here. Right, that this is just normal life, that public property is for everyone, and the reality is that that's what happens. Animals that are walking in a place where they're allowed to be are going to step on things, are going to eat things, and it's not practical to expect that the owner of any animal is going to follow him around everywhere in the public place where he's entitled to be and start making sure that he never eats anything, he never steps on anything. That's not really practical. So here it's interesting. Basically, you have kind of a orche svara, the kederech svara, that cuts both ways, because it's both an exemption and a mechayev, depending on how you apply the term. But on the one hand, we're saying that when it comes to an animal stepping on things and eating things in the public thoroughfare, so that's just so normal and so unavoidable that you're pater. Now, how do you understand, just take it a step further, the tour? Okay, so fine, so it's normal, but lemaisa, and you're allowed to be there, fine, but lemaisa, your animal ate somebody else's stuff, stepped on somebody else's stuff. Why does its normality translate to your being exempt? So it could be because it's simply not reasonable to ask you to stop that from happening. And if all the liability emerges from your responsibility to protect the harm from happening, prevent the harm from happening, if it's not something you can realistically prevent, so then there shouldn't be a chiyuv. Right?
Do we say anything along the lines of, well, because it's rishos and it's also partially rishos?
That's related, right? So you're there legally. And that should apparently imply, okay, so once we're saying this is something you can be doing, and it's inevitable it's going to have these damaging consequences, so then we can't say you have to pay for that. But, on the other hand, something being the derech could also be a mechayev, that when it's been established you have a shor muad, when you have an animal that has established its tendency to do something regularly, so then that has a different application of the derech. That goes back into the language you found on Beis Amud Aleph, shadarkon lahazik, that its derech is to be dangerous, and therefore that creates a machayev. That's what means you have the responsibility. So the same word, so to speak, or the same notion applies itself in two different directions. Things which are kederech, meaning so normal that you can't be expected to stop them, and things which are kederech, meaning you should know about them and therefore you are liable to stop them. So on the one hand, it's normal for you to have your cow walking in the street and it can't be your problem if it steps on things. On the other hand, it's also normal for this violent ox that's proven itself to go around goring things, and therefore that normality means you have to watch it and not allow it to be in places where it can do damage. That's an interesting two-way application. So the notion of your being permitted to be there is going to come up a couple times above a comma. There's a sugya that's much later on. I would like to get to it, and hopefully we'll go at a good pace so we can get the concepts that are much further in the Gemara. But there's a somewhat tricky and controversial concept which appears later on, where the Gemara talks about hezek that happens in the context of a mitzvah. So let's say somebody is running around on Erev Shabbos the Gemara talks about. Or let's say somebody does fire damage through his Hanukkah candles in certain limited circumstances. So there the Gemara has this phrase, Ratz Bereshus. Let's say in terms of the damage on Erev Shabbos. So it's the same idea of Rishus, maybe, that you have permission to be doing what you're doing. Now, how do you understand that? Does that translate into some broad exemption for people who are involved in mitzvos, which could be a very tricky path to go down? It's an interesting question. So, God willing, we'll get to that. I'm just mentioning it now because this notion of when you're entitled to be where you are, that somehow creates an exemption, that might be a relevant concept. Okay, so that seems to also impact on how we understand things. So Shane and Regel, which are simply unavoidable, if they do damage in a public place, that you can't be expected to stop. But you can be expected to stop your animals from going into other people's property. And if you have a particularly dangerous animal, you can be expected to stop them from being loose in the Rishus HaRabim as well. So it points to a certain aspect of where the Machayev is coming from. Okay, so far so good. Everything makes sense. Okay, so now let's look at that Mishnah on Tezvav and Mideis and see how does that fit into the discussion. So the Mishnah tells us that Chamisha Tamin and Chamisha Muadin, and if there are some animals which are considered to be Tam, they're not established as dangerous, and some which are established to be dangerous. Habehema eina mu'edas, a behema, an animal is not considered to be a... I'm sorry, it's different ways in which it could be tam mu'ad. An animal is not considered to be mu'ad, lo ligach, lo ligof, lo lasha, lo lirgos, lo livom. Right, so if you're talking about a situation where the animal is goring, or the animal is pushing, or the animal is biting, or the animal is crouching on something, or the animal is kicking something. So none of those are considered to be things that are expected of it, and it doesn't have a mu'ad status for those kinds of actions. Hashem, mu'edes lechol asaroila, but for consumption, Hashem, an animal can be expected to eat that which is fitting for it, to eat things which are normal, which essentially is contrasting with the wine in the Gemara we just saw. That if the animal eats something unusual, it's a different story. But for an animal to eat something which it can be expected to eat, so that essentially has a status of mu'ad. Haregel mu'edas lishbor b'darach hilucha. A regel can be expected to break things as it is going in its path. V'shor ha-mu'ad, v'shor ha-mazik b'rishus ha-nizak. So those are all categories where there's automatic liability. A shore that is established as dangerous, a shore that is mazik rishus hanizak if it goes into somebody else's property, and a person, adam muad olam, saying that a person is always considered to be fully warned and fully liable for what he's going to do. And then the Mishnah lists off a bunch of animals, Hazev, Ha'ari, Ha'adov, Ha'adnamar, Ha'abardalas. It's a discussion where a bardalas is. Other than that, you have a wolf, or a lion, or a bear, or a leopard. V'hanachash, Harei Elu Mu'adim. These are all considered to be established as dangerous. Somebody told me once, Tamar Chacham told me once, I never looked this up, but... if you read, just to fill in the background, if you read Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's Svarim, so Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was a tremendous master of all areas of Torah. Somebody who was a baki in Shas and Poskim, and in Tanakh, and in grammar, and diktuk, and the trup, he was holding in everything. So somebody told me a story once, which I assume, and I didn't check this out, but they were helping Rabbi Yaakov move from one house to the next, and they noticed that he had a concordance. You know, nowadays, it doesn't have so much relevance in the era when you can just search for everything online, or search for everything on the app that you have on your phone. But it used to be people would use concordances, and where they would have Svarim that would list where all the words are found in Tanakh, and where they're found, and what's the context, etc., etc. So I guess the person didn't think that this was a sefer that a Rosh Yeshiva would have so much use for. So I guess, again, you know, not really appreciating the range of Rabbi Yaakov's knowledge. And so he asked him, what does he do with it? So to make the point, Rabbi Yaakov said to him, he said, when you learn the Mishnah in Bava Kamma, it says, Zev, Vahari, Vahadov, etc. It says, you ever wonder why the Mishnah lists the animals in that order? And not surprisingly, the person says, no, I never wondered that. He says, well, if you look it up in the concordance, you'll find that this is the order in which they appear in Tanakh. I don't know if it's actually true. I didn't check it, but that's remember the story. Sorry? Right, so the Nachash, the question, because the Nachash is clearly earlier. Right, so I don't know. That part itself is self, for those of us who paid attention to Kriya Satora this past week. So somehow, this Mishnah was invoked to make this point. But a person who told me the story, he said, in any event, this question of how to read the Mishnah, it's a fourth time around question. And when you've learned Shas for the fourth time, then you start wondering, okay, why are things in the order that they're in? All right, in any event, so these animals are all considered to be muad. So, Blazer Omar Bizman Shein B'nei Tarbus, Eina Muad. So if they are cultured, if they're considered to be domesticated, we use tarbus nowadays as culture, but it's the modern definition. But presumably the better definition here is if they're domesticated, if they are tamed, so eina muadin, then we don't necessarily assume that that's their nature. Maybe that was the answer. That maybe said Nachash is listed last because it has its different category. I don't remember. In any event, that could be. But Nachash is always considered to be dangerous. We don't assume that you can tame a snake. So, in any event, so all these animals, Zev, Ari, Dove, etc. So, what exactly is the nature of their liability? What kind of category are they going to be in? These animals that we establish them as muad, so what are they? So Tosfos talks about this. And you can look at this Tosfos tomorrow also. You can add this to the list. But Tosfos takes up this question. If you just look at the last lines of Tosfos. So Tosfos says, "Kevan de orche b'hachi, hevi kamo regel, u'pater b'shus harabim, v'lo hevi kamo kerem, b'asher di'ay, afal pi d'miskavim lahazik, midachashuv le'gav yechrini." Okay, so these animals, I mean, I read that line a little bit out of context, but the point is that these chiyuvim, how are they treated as? Regel. You could have thought that they are Karen. Aren't these animals malicious animals? Say if we're talking about a lion or a wolf who's going to attack somebody or attack an animal, so would that not be Kavanos Lahazik? So apparently not. Apparently, since this is Orche, so that is considered to be shame. Which is a very interesting or regal. Here we have regal here. So that's a very interesting presumption for a lot of reasons. But according to Tosfos, so what is the defining attribute of Karen? Mishunah. Apparently it's got to be Mishunah in order for it to be Karen. If it's not Mishunah, if it's Orche, So then already, that's not Karen. And it has a huge nafkamina that you'd be pater b'shus aravim. And perhaps pater completely. That's a very big implication. Okay. So the Rambam, however, the Rambam sounds differently. Sounds like from the Rambam that this could be Karen. And therefore, how is the Rambam defining Karen? As Kavanos Elahazik. And other things which are Kavanos Elahazik could theoretically also be. Rav Soloveitchik in his Shiurim, so he fleshes this out a little bit, this machlokas between the Rambam and Tosfos on this point. And he notes, and I can give you some sources to look at for tomorrow to express this, that it sounds like from the Rambam, right, once we say that Karen is defined by Kavanos Elahazik rather than Mishunah, that Mishunah actually could be applicable to any of these categories. And that therefore the possibility of Chatzi Nezek could come up by these other categories also. And it doesn't have to be tied specifically to Karen, but could come up even for these other categories. Okay, so far so good? Yes, sir?
If that's the case, then how do you then distinguish what falls under which of? Meaning, once you can say that Mishnah can be categorized in any place, how do you then discern?
Kavanos Elahazik.
If it has Kavanos Elahazik or not.
Right, that seems to be the ikker for him.
And then it doesn't matter if it's in Shein or Rego?
Well, the Kavanos Elahazik will make it Karen.
Right, but if it's not Kavanos Elahazik, then you still have to discern between Shein Brego. So not
right, defining between Karen, well, that could still be Derech Hilucha or Hanab Hazeko, but we don't know yet whether it's so important to distinguish between those two. It could be those just two different ways to come onto our list, but once they come onto our list, you know, then they don't necessarily have to be treated differently than each other. But we'll see about that. Jed?
I just understand what he's saying. So for instance, then the case of the dog or the cat eating the smaller animal, so that would be like potentially a case of shame, but with mishunah. So it's chatzi nezek, but for shame.
Right, could be. Or here Tosfos called it regel. Well, yeah. So that's it could be either way. Yeah.
Doesn't the Gemara categorize that situation as Karen?
Which one here?
The one by
Kalba. So we thought it did, because Tosfos thought it did, because it talked about Chatzi Nezek. Right? But if Chatzi Nezek isn't tied down to Karen, then maybe it doesn't have to be. Tosfos Shitasim is going to keep it as Karen. All the Gemara told us was that it was subject to rules of Knossos, that we don't take it in Bavel, etc. So if that's unique to Karen, then it's saying it's Karen. But if you're open to it being something else, then it doesn't have to be. Jed?
Where's the Rambam and the Rav?
So I'll send around the Ravs in the Shirim on the Daf. But I'll send for tomorrow, I'll send around some more specific sources to look at. But let's put one more thing on the table, then we'll review and we'll daven mincha. So what we'll pick up from tomorrow is just, let's just say a few words of introduction. What about an animal biting something? It's called in Hebrew Neshicha. So where does Neshicha fit in? So this highlights a little bit the abstract nature of Bava Kamma, right? Because a part of what's a little hard to relate to, or easy to relate to depending on what you drift to more, is the abstract usage of words. Because you'll say, what do you mean? Obviously biting is shame. You bite with your teeth. So how could you question where biting goes? So the reason you can question it is because in Bava Kamma, shein does not mean tooth. Shein means hanal hazeko. That's the abstract nature of this masechta. So that leaves us able to question, okay, when you bite, is that called tooth or not? because tooth doesn't mean tooth. Tooth means hanava hazeka. So our Gemara talks a little bit about that. Right? The Gemara says that what is neshicha? Neshicha, according to the Gemara, is actually something else. Right? It's on the bottom of Beis and Beis. Here, neshicha, the line's actually a little bit earlier than that. The Gemara lists off, where'd that Gemara go? Here it is. In the middle of the page, told to the Karen Samahi. What are the told us of Karen? Negifa, neshicha, revitza, uviita. So all of those are considered to be aspects of Karen. So closer to the bottom of the page, the Gemara asks, neshicha, biting is Karen? You bite with a horn? So again, Karen is not a horn. Karen is a certain abstract category. So asks the Gemara, isn't Neshicha Karen? I lost that line. It's towards the bottom of the page. Where'd it go? Where'd it go? It was here a second ago. Yeah, Neshicha told the Shehu. Isn't Neshicha, this is about 12 lines up, the word that begins with La'adam, so Neshicha told the Shehni, isn't Neshicha really about Shein? Isn't it about tooth? Don't you bite with your tooth? No, lo, Shein yesh hana l'hazeka, ha ain hana l'hazeka. So no, just because you do it with a tooth does not make it Shein. Shein is defined as that which is going to be bringing you some benefit. And if you bite, that doesn't bring you benefit. Just because you do it with your mouth, that do you do it with your teeth, that does not necessarily fall under the category of shame. So again, that line is useful for highlighting just how counterintuitive and abstract things can be. But is that an absolute? Is biting something always called Karen, or could it be called Shane also? So here there is an important Rashba, and that's going to impact some practical cases hopefully we'll get to tomorrow. So I will ask you to look at the Rashba here. You don't have to remember this thing, I will send out the list. But that's a part of what we'll hopefully see for tomorrow. And we'll see how that could theoretically impact some interesting practical situations. So just to quickly review, what did we see? We saw that our Gemara wants to know whether the Avos and Toldos share the same properties, and the Gemara talks about Shor as one of the Avos Nezikin. Shor has his subcategories of Karen, Shein, and Regel, and they each have defining characteristics and halachic nafkaminas. So we have to figure out which is which because of the halachic nafkaminas. It's most important to figure out what is Karen and what isn't, because Karen is most different from the other two in what amounts to three ways. One way in that we have a concept of chatzi nezek. We'll see if that's unique to Karen, but it sounds like it. If it is chatzi nezek, and that's a knas, that has extra implications because a knas is not dealt with in the lack of a smuchim situation. And the very major exemption also that Karen is chayiv in Rosh Hasharavim while the other two are not. And the other two have a p'tur of Rosh Hasharavim, which based on the pasuk of Bir B'Stei Acher, but as the Rosh quotes the Rif in explaining, that also can be understood as a reflection of its inevitability, that this is just how normal life is, and you can't expect somebody to stop that from happening. And in terms of the defining attributes, so Karen, our Gemara says, is Kavanasa Lahazik. The Gemara towards the end of the parak talks about Mishuna, and it sounds like, depending on which Rishon you read, that that's defining Karen also, leaving us with two possible definitions of Karen, either Konasa Lahazik or Mishuna, as opposed to Shein is Hana Lahazeko, and Regel is Derech Hilucha. And then we talked about what is the dominant definition and how the Mishnah is going to talk about on Tesvav about various animals that start off Muad, and Tosfos seems to understand that that is considered to be Regel, even though they are situations of Kavanasa Lahazik, But once they are orche, once they're not mishona, so then they're not going to be karen. But the Rambam sounds differently. The Rambam seems to define karen as kavanas lahazik, and possibly mishona as something which could be applicable to the other ones as well. And then we looked at how the Gemara says counterintuitively that neshicha is horn rather than tooth. Seems hard to understand. So we see that that's a function of its being more conceptual than literal, and that karen does not mean horn. It means kavanas lahazik. And chain does not mean tooth. It means hanal hazeko, and that's why biting ends up as karen rather than shane. But is that absolute? Is biting always karen? So you'll see tomorrow how the Rashba calls that into question, and we'll see how that can be practically applied. And then we have one more question to deal with, which is who's going to daven mincha for us? Do we have a volunteer? Yeah.
Ashri,